Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up, all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right, we're going to wake up everybody. We'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. Today's date is November 13, 2021. Our theme tonight is part two, Signs of the Time. Yes, we're going to talk about signs of the times with some current events. And when we talk about these current events, we have chosen these topics because we believe they are relevant to what's going on in your community and your world. The order for today's event will include: what is freedom? Giving the people something to think about. followed by Brother Maurice, who will give us some impaged black men facts. Then we will have a message to the community from Alex Joyner. After Alex Joyner, we will ask you to call in and participate on this program by dialing 818-337-0016. And we hope to have an update report on the recent election in Nicaragua with Brother Bamboshi Shango, followed by discussion of the signs of the time and our current events. That will be our order for today's program. So like always on MPH Radio, let's get started. But first and foremost, we want to always give you something to think about. When we talk about something to think about, we're going to talk about this concept of freedom. What is freedom? Freedom is the concept where a man and woman been fighting over for hundreds and thousands of years. And we're still having a hard time trying to understand the concept. So what we have done is taken some conceptions by certain historical figures who gave us a perspective of how they view this concept of freedom. One of the first perspectives we have for today's program would be from Marcus Garvey, where he stated, if you have no confidence in self, you are twice defeated in the race of life. Let me read that back to you again. If you have no confidence in self, you are twice defeated in the race of life. What do you think about that concept as it comes to this concept of freedom? Next, we have Serena Williams. She stated, I am lucky that whatever I feel I have inside of me, my desire to win is always stronger. Let me repeat that again. Serena Williams stated, I am lucky that whatever feel I have inside me, my desire to win is always stronger. And last but not least, we go with Nelson Mandela. He stated, for to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. Now, read it one more time for you. Tell me what you think about it. How do these concepts fit into your concept of understanding freedom? For to be free is not merely to cast off one chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others. So we have given you three definitions of freedom by Marcus Garvey, Serena Williams, and Nelson Mandela. Maybe how can you apply these concepts to your understanding of freedom? So that's to give you a little something to think about. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, station break, and when we come back, we're going to have Brother Maurice. He can share with you some MPH Black Men Fact. This is MPH Radio.
Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for heroes. People need someone to look up. Never found anyone who fulfilled my needs. A lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me. Take off.
like to welcome you back from Music with a Message. This is the voice of MPH Radio, and we now will make our transition to our friend and a supporter of MPH Radio, Brother Maurice Robinson. He will share with you some a black minifact for today's program. Brother Maurice, we welcome you to Missing Pages of History.
Peace and greetings, brother Lee, and peace and greetings to the world. I'm about to read to you a missing page, black history known fact. The title of this article is Oshkosh B'gosh Store was named after a black Native American named Chief Oshkosh. African Americans and Native Americans have had a strong association and connection that dates back many decades. Many Native Americans became leaders and chiefs of their own tribes, including a Negro Native American named Chief Oshkosh in the late 1700s into the early 1800s. He was a part of the Pawnee and Menominee Native Americans from Wisconsin, and excuse my pronunciation. According to Gabriel Scott, a respected lecturer and historian, the United States government attempted to force Chief Oshkosh and his tribe off their many acres of land to relocate to Minnesota. They did lose some land, but not all of it, thanks to Chief Oshkosh not giving up. By Chief Oshkosh not giving up, the United States government had no choice but to let it go. His tribe sided with Britain in the War of 1812, but then sided with the Americans in the 1832 Black Hawk War. At the time of his death, he weighed 400 pounds due to being an alcoholic. The city of Oshkosh, Wisconsin, is named after him. Some of you might be familiar with a popular apparel children's clothing store called, quote-unquote, Oshkosh B'gosh. They sell a variety of clothes, mainly for toddlers, who would have known that Oshkosh B'gosh was named after an unsung Negro or African, Chief Oshkosh. One of the company's corporate offices is also located in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. The Trail of Tears was very brutal and crucial movement during the 1830s that involved five Native American tribes. Those tribes included Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Muscogee, and Seminole. They were forced out of their homelands by the United States government to relocate to modern-day Oklahoma. This has been your missing page Black History Fact. Thank you.
All right, you're listening, Brother Maurice Robson, who's a friend supporter of MPH Radio, and that was our Black Minifact for today's program. We now will make our transition to Brother Ali Joyner. He has a special message to the community, and we would now like to welcome Brother Alex. Welcome to MPH Radio, Brother Alex.
Yes, I would like to welcome the listeners and callers today to the show. I thank Maurice, the other guest speakers, and the commentators who will call in for their facts and opinion on the matters at hand. I thank the staff of Missing Pages in History. They do such a wonderful job, Susie and Mr. Roberts, for bringing us this knowledge and uncovering the history that most of us have never learned before. Over the past weeks, I have been absorbed in the murder trial of Ahmaud Arbery. It has brought up the feelings of despair and sentiment for his family. It has been painful to watch, as was George Floyd's death. Ms. Arbery was running for his life for over 5 minutes. The color of his skin had sentenced him to suspicion and a wrongful death. Nothing was seen on his person or recorded stolen by him on any video. The neighborhood he ran around was one he ran through often. He didn't belong there was a common thought among those who chased him. In the eyes of some people, being black is enough for suspicion, ire, and swift civilian justice. The law has often turned its back on these cases to enforce the victim's right. In this case, the judge didn't even want Mr. Aubrey to be called a victim and allowed evidence to be withheld. A most damaging effect on justice is what the system allows and doesn't. The murder of the people of color has been shadowed by the citizens' arrest laws in the United States since before and after the Civil War. Who are the courts trying to fool? The selected jury is almost all white, and Mr. Aubrey's name will be dragged in the mud as Mr. Floyd was during Officer Chauvin's trial. The judge could have reseated a more diverse jury from the community, but chose not to do so. He acknowledged the unfair racial selection by the defense, but did nothing. The odds were stacked against fairness and justice because the case was presented. How many times been blind to the people of color? As Mr. Aubrey's body lay on the ground with his life slowly draining away, no one gave aid or comfort. His murderer did not care for his life. The police officer who arrived first on the scene didn't concern himself with care or comfort, as recalled a death rattle sound from Mr. Aubrey laying in a pool of blood on his stomach. The judge abandoned the thought of him being called a victim. Now, will a stacked jury turn their back over a simple fact that everyone was wrong in their intentions, and that a life, a black life, a simple life of a man who loved to run, needed not to end this way? Citizen rest? No, all citizens should detest this most brutal murder and wrongful death. Everybody plays the fool, so your heart is broken. You sit around moping, crying, crying. You say you're even thinking about dying? Well, before you do anything rash, dig this. Everybody plays the fool sometimes. There's no exception to the rule. Listen, baby, it may be factual, may be cruel. I ain't lying. Everybody plays the fool. It was an extremely popular tune in August of 1972. The song was by the group called The Main Ingredient. I used to sing it all the time. I thought I knew its true meaning the first time I fell in love and got hurt. My first love is in the past now, and I find myself with a new heartbreak. This heartbreak is over how the people of color are mistreated by an unjust system of laws that protect the guilty and leave the victims they murdered in forgotten graves. I have sat and watched trials over the past year of unjustified murder of young black men at the hands of law enforcement officers and vigilantes hiding behind Jim Crow laws and one-sided juries. I feel for the families of these men who've lived the day before happily and carefree before being murdered in cold blood. Fathers of family, as well as sons of mothers, have laid and morgues across this country. How many more do we have to mourn for? I'm trying to make sense of what makes a person kill another over color. This is an age-old problem in America. The color of one's skin is the first thing that another sees, and you are prejudged by it. To live a full life is hard by a person of color. It is hard because fear and prejudice overrule common sense of life. To have common sense is difficult for many. Mental health issues abound in our world, arrogance and disrespect is common among gangs and street thugs. Lies were told to generations to make them feel worthless and inferior. Myths become dangerous to the people of color as they search for an identity. Just to walk down the street is a death sentence for many. Someone will see your color as a threat that needs to be dealt with. European citizens who came to America decided they needed cheap and free labor to make untold profit. They knew that one day the citizens they enslaved would demand freedom in order to keep the powers of privilege and the control of the government in their favor for centuries. They made up as many laws as possible to disenfranchise the people of color and bound into slavery. To ensure the separation and mistrust of these African races, they turned tribe against tribe. The slave owners were the cruelest people who ever lived. Many of them beat and raped young children, enslaved and free women. They hung and killed slaves or free persons as they pleased. The law was never on the person of color side until after the Civil War. The people of color lived in fear of their own government and the European Americans ever since the first day they were taken in chains to America. Many of the people of color were accused of crimes they did not commit, for the color of the skin was a crime in the Americas. Justice is blinded by privilege and the ignorance of those who seek to keep innocent men locked up behind bars. Over the next few months, we will get a real feel of whether America has changed. The juries and judges are stacked against the people of black and brown skin because the history of the United States leaves out so much. That the African American has shown humbleness and loyalty in every conflict or war this country has engaged in. Not receiving credit or honor as a citizen, he had to fight in his own birthplace to survive. The hands of the enslaved and free men that built the physical structures of this country from nothing into something have never received compensation for their labors. They have received only threats of harm and death. Regardless of the verdicts that are rendered, my heart has been used like a tool. My heart has become an emotional fire that cannot trust the system of justice. Standard of trial can only be a show to fool the public that an attempt of justice has been performed. However, we as people cannot allow ourselves to be played as fools. The pain and hurt will linger forever among the victim's family. The nation suffers when we are torn apart, the people of the treatment suffer in the courtrooms of America. All eyes are on this nation. We must support these victims' families after decisions are made. The love of our black lives and families must never fade from this earth. We are not fools unless we accept the circumstances we are given. I do nothing to improve ourselves. Laws, verdicts, and the hearts of people can be changed by good men who have suffered and desire change for the best of everyone. And I thank you.
We'd like to thank Mr. Ali Joyner for his message to the community. And right now what we're going to do is take a quick station break with music with a message. And when we come back, we have a national election observer who was recently in Nicaragua, Brother Bambosha Shungo, going to give us a perspective on the recent election that took place in Nicaragua when we return. This is the voice of MPH Radio.
Choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now, people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors.
That's right. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? And why does it matter? But anyway, we'll continue to move on as we continue to give you information so that you can use it as a tool for liberation. And just recently, there was a very important election that took place in Nicaragua. And we have been fortunate enough to have been able to contact a election observer at that particular election. And he's going to come back and share with us a report of what he saw, what he learned in terms of this election that place in Nicaragua and why it's so important for our underserved communities to know what's going on around the world as it relates to other underserved communities. So right now we are proud to bring in Brother Bamboshi Shungo as a national observer at the Nicaragua recent election. We'd like to welcome him to Missing Pages of History. We welcome you, Brother Bamboshi, to MPH Radio. Welcome.
Thank you, brother.
Brother Bamboshi, you was a national observer for the recent election that took place in Nicaragua. Can you just give our people a general overview of what you saw, what you felt, and how was the overall functioning of the election as it relates to the people participating in their democracy and choosing their leadership?
Just a little background. First of all, we went down as international election accompaniment, which is equivalent to election observers or election monitors. And we went down because there was going to be controversy about this election. Nicaragua, if folks remember, is the little country that the United States used to happily call a banana republic until the Sandinista revolution took place in the 1980s. As you may also remember, America did everything possible to reverse this revolution, including appointing Ali North to supply the Contras with guns that they bought from Israel after raising money inside the United States by selling dope to the community of, beginning with the community in Los Angeles, California, and then spreading across the country, the dope that they got from the Contras in Nicaragua who was fighting the Sandinista Revolution. And you know that this struggle against the Contras heightened the suffering of the people in Nicaragua to a point where an election was held and they elected a U.S. neocolonial puppet, Venola Chimora. And recently, in 2007, the Sandinista true elections were able to take back control of Nicaragua. And ever since 2007, the United States has been waging a campaign for regime change in Nicaragua, like they're waging in Venezuela and in Cuba. So this election was extremely important because your president lied and said that the election would not be fair, the elections would be stolen, that folks would be arrested and tortured, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We are here to tell you that this statement was a lie. And not only did he say it before the election, he repeated it on Sunday night right after the elections, even before the votes were counted, before he knew whether his statement would even reflect anything vaguely remotely. We went down to look at this election, and we can tell you that, one, the people who were arrested for taking money from the United States. They themselves were not running for any office. They weren't even, they were feeding money and trying to feed money to people who were running for political office. We want to tell you that in the case of the presidential election itself, there were six candidates for this election. Daniel Ortega won the election fair and square with over 64% of the vote. The other candidates admit defeat. All of this America claims did not happen or happened some other way. And we went basically into Managua, the capital city, but we left Managua and our observation delegation really went as an accompaniment to the what is called the Caribbean coast of Nicaragua, an area called Bluefield, where the majority of the population is African. We also went up to another little area called Pearl Lagoon, where the majority of the population were indigenous. And we observed several polling places. We spoke with the folks after they vote. They all basically said the same thing, that in 2007, after that election, their life had improved, that many places in Bluefield and in Pearl Lagoon had no paved roads. They now have roads. Bluefield and Pearl Lagoon have a road that goes directly to Nicaragua, capital Managua, which will get them there in six hours, when before they had to take an 8-hour to 10-hour boat trip to get to the opposite side of the country, to the Capitol. They'll tell you that in the last year, Nicaragua suffered through two major elections, and that after, I'm sorry, not major elections, major hurricanes. And after the hurricanes, immediately, within a week, they already had electric lights restored, and they had buildings repaired, etc. And they compare that and contrast it to what has happened in Puerto Rico after the hurricane there 2 years ago. They still have parts of the island that has no electricity. The people were convinced that the Sandinista government had done more for them since 2007 than what the neocolonial government did. As a matter of fact, the neocolonial government before the Sandinistas did nothing. So our delegation observed this in speaking to people there on the ground, not as your president, who hasn't spoken to anyone there, comes up with all these lies about Nicaragua. We're happy to say that this victory for the people of Nicaragua also helps the people of Cuba, who, as you may know, will come under attack on Monday on the 15th, where the U.S. is threatening all sorts of calamities if the Cuban government does not allow a small group of individuals who they have paid and incited through social media to take to the street to have a demonstration. So this victory will also help the Venezuelan people, who are suffering under a major economic and material and medical sanctions placed on them by the United States, where they cannot even get the necessary medicine and necessary vaccination equipment to fight against the pandemic. And it's not like the borders will keep the pandemic out. So if you allow the pandemic to grow in one country, it definitely will come back to you. So we just wanted to give that short report. We thank you for your time, and we appreciate the kindness of Brother Africa, Mr. Robinson, for allowing us to tell you this information. Thank you very much.
One quick question, Boshi. What was the winning percentage by President Ortega? What was the winning percentage that he won by?
74%. With a turnout that was much higher than any elections the United States have held in the past 40 or 50 years.
And one of the things you alluded to earlier in terms of the overall conditions and behavior of the people, you saw a lot of situations when people, you said, were very calm. There was not all this chaos that you read about in America when the claims going on in Nicaragua. You said very peaceful, very orderly. Is this what you experienced when you was in Nicaragua just now, Brother Bamboshi?
Let me say there was about 147 elections observers accompaniment, and they went to different parts of the country, and nobody reported any violence, any chaos, any calamities. They all witnessed a perfectly peaceful election, and they spoke with people in each of these places and got basically the same story from everybody.
Okay, Brother Bamboshi, we'd like to definitely thank you for giving us a first-hand report and actually seeing the realities on the ground in Nicaragua. And we'd like to thank you again and stay in touch. And we thank you for the work that you continue to do for our underserved communities.
Thank you, and thank you, audience.
All right, this is MPH Radio. You have just heard Brother Bamboshi Shango. He was a national observer from the U.S. observing the recent elections that took place in Nicaragua. You heard that being an open, fair, and democratic process, and the people are organized to fight for their interests. So, again, this was firsthand information that was observed from on the ground, from the people, and we are very fortunate to have relationship with people who's doing the work like Brother Bamboshi. So right now, what we're going to do is take a quick station break with music with a message, and when we come back, we're going to continue the discussion as we talk about our themes, signs of the times, current events. We're going to discuss this article from News Ghana. It's titled, Washington is to Take Over Africa. It's a real interesting article. This is an article of interest, and we're going to have a little discussion with it. We're on it, and we would like for you to join in with us by dialing 818-337-0016 when we return. Again, this is MPH Radio. Yes, you got us living on the front line. Yes, we are born from the same mother, Mother Africa. We welcome you back to MPH Radio. We will now begin our discussion on our theme tonight, Signs of the Times. We'd like to encourage you, if you're the listening audience, you'd like to share your thoughts and ideas, please feel free to call in at 818-337-0016. Hit 1 and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. You know, this is our article of interest for this program today. You can check out the Ghana News. And this article is actually written back in May 31st, 2021. It titles, Washington is to take over Africa. Let me repeat that. Washington is to take over Africa. Let me just read you a few lines in reference to this article if you haven't had a chance to view this article yet. But again, we encourage you please do so because we want to make sure not only do we understand what's going on in the underserved communities, but also we want to connect the dots and understand the relationship between all of our communities and our daily lives. These are the missing pages that we want to fill in. This article reads, Africa has 30% of the remaining minerals resources in the world, which largely remain untouched. According to recent forecasts, Africa will become a global strategic resource reserve by 2030. First of all, this referred to the irreplaceable types of minerals regularly used in the military. Even now, the U.S. military industrial complex depends on imports of non-ferrous and rare metals from African countries exceeds 50%. However, the White House took care of gaining free access to Africa raw materials in advance in the mid-1990s. The American Mineral Fields and Barrick Gold, supported by the U.S. government, gained control over the coltan and cobalt deposits in the Republic of Congo, since Washington had begun to provide military equipment to pro-Uganda and pro-Rwanda militants controlling the East region. It is worth noting that the former U.S. President George H.W. Bush served on the board of directors of these companies. I'll stop right there. We'd like to bring in my co-host, Brother Alex. We will have the discussion. Again, you feel free to call in and share your views and opinions and we discuss this issue by calling again, 818-337-0016. Alex, we're talking about signs of the time. There seems to be an ongoing narrative where Africa is still trying to be dominated by Western forces, i.e. U.S. and Europe. When we read this article, Washington to take over Africa, who gives Washington the rights to take over and control any people resources? What you thought about this article, and what are some of the points that stood out to you when you read this article, Brother Alex?
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Lee, for letting me join you today and sharing my opinions. And one of those opinions is America followed in the footsteps of its colonial ancestors. And it spread out and started taking other places many years ago. It took the land here that we call America from the Indians and built a country and gave it laws and excluded many and gave privileges to so many. And then it spread beyond its own borders and started taking countries like Puerto Rico, Guam, Samoa. It reached into the Philippines and started setting up different camps, bases, went to Korea, went to Vietnam, went all over the world trying to spread its ideas of democracy, freedom, and justice for all. but was failing in this at home itself as it began to reach out. Because America saw other nations and countries as being valuable, their resources, their people, their labor, that they could get cheap to do things. And when you can take over other people's resources at a discounted price, then you can remain the superpower that you claim to be. So America for many years has done this, and has done this to many people. Yes, we have put bases in all over the world. Our soldiers have went anywhere and everywhere. They have been called to do duty. But still, the face of America is not being seen by a lot of countries, and it's supporting interest of wealth of what they can rid these countries of, because they figure that these countries are too undeveloped to understand the importance of what they are giving away. And so just as though we were settled through colonialism many years ago, that same program is being implemented all over. And now the focus is on Africa. And it's been there for a long time. Bush is not the only president. He wasn't the first president. He will not be the last president who have been putting interest in Africa, because there's profit to be made. And while and when there's profit to be made, the United States is going to be foremost in having their hand out to receive something at the lowest cost possible. Look at how much they were planning to invest in Africa, maybe $300, $400, $500 million. Africa is worth trillions of dollars. If you're talking about what we're going in and going after, whether it's the gold, the cobalt mines or whatever, the diamonds, whatever that we want to pull out, the oil, whatever we want to pull out of Africa, it is worth more than trillions of dollars than the billions. But we will never pay that price. We will never give them a fair price. We will never give them a fair board. It won't happen. Because, again, you're looking at people that they consider up under them, not above, but people that they consider under them. And when you consider somebody is under you, you don't deal fairly with them because you don't want them on your level. But until America lives out to his creed and say it wants to be just, it wants to be fair, then free trade, yes, should establish between the two countries, because that's what Africa needs. It needs hospitals. It needs schools. It needs better infrastructure. There's a lot of good that can come out of it. But at least make it fair on both sides. And the United States has not been making it fair for centuries. So I'll turn it back over to you, and I want to hear all the other comments that come in today. And I thank you again.
Thank you, Brother Alex. This is the Voice of MPH Radio. We're discussing the article for the week for this program. Comes under the Ghana News, Washington is to take over Africa. And which is sort of interesting when you think about the word take. That seems to be a continued theme to Western history. When you study the behavior of the West, they have this notion to want to just take. And what do y'all think about this? What do y'all think about this whole question? They're going to want to take over African resources. How would it impact African people around the world? And we've been sons and daughters who came from Mother Africa. What role and responsibility do we have to ensure that Africa gets its freedom and independence from all forms of domination? We have a caller who's been waiting patiently. We're going to bring this call in. Caller 6057, 6057. When you read this article, caller, what are some of the lessons that you can take from this particular article on the importance of why we need to understand the implication? If Washington takes over Africa's major resources, what kind of implication would it have on African people around the world? Called a 6057. Your response.
Yes. The continued exploitation and oppression of Africans worldwide, especially on the continent of Africa. And, you know, and I thought my biggest takeaway from this article is that imperialist forces around the world have been plotting to take over Africa's resources on a continental scale for decades. And the only way Africans can prevent this from happening is for Africans to get organized and unify and take control of Africa. And that starts with political unification, first of all, because politics drives everything else. And I think another takeaway from this article is that it assumes that things will remain as they are, that Africa will remain divided, disunited, and weak. But if you look at African history as a whole, we have overcome a great deal over the thousands of years we've been on the earth. And we've overcome things like desertification of the land and invasions by various forces that have tried to take control of the labor and resources of Africa. And I think with organization and political education, we'll overcome this latest imperialist attempt to seize control of the resources of Africa. And when Africa is organized and unified under one socialist government, and it'll be able to, use the resources of Africa to advance its own interests instead of serving as the milk cow for all the imperialist countries of the world. And I think that's the article is very good in laying out the resources that Africa has and its riches. What it does underestimate is the people's will to survive and live as human beings. And I don't think things will always be the way they are presently. And at present it appears that the imperialist forces will dominate and maintain control over Africa forever. But I think Africans have the will to be free and function as human beings like every other people on the planet. And we have not come this far if that wasn't the case. And I think it just takes the organization and political education of the masses of our people to get control of our land, our resources. And that way, and once we do that, Africans around the world will be respected. And the reason why we're disrespected now is because we're disorganized.
Thank you, Carla. We go to our brother Maurice. We will bring him in. You know, one of the things they always tell me that Africans are not poor. They are just poorly organized. We can see how rich this continent is, but yet we can see how exploited we are being. Brother Maurice, when you talk about this article wanting to take over Africa, it has a lot of economic implications as well. What is your take from this article, Brother Maurice?
Yes, and just to follow Brother Alex
Brother Anthony.
Brother Anthony, I'm sorry. Yes, Brother Anthony and Brother Alex. You know, they couldn't have said it better. If we don't, as Africans, if African do comes to total control, full total control under capitalists and European domination, we are done as Africans here in America, as Africans in Brazil, as Africans in Cuba, Haiti, in the UK, anywhere you find yourself in the world being African, we are done. But if we can beat colonialism at a time in the 1960s when African independence was on the rise, and you know, with Nkrumah, with Sekou Touré, with Patrice Lumumba, with NASA and Egypt, with all of our Pan-Africanists, what the key word is Pan-Africanist, Pan-Africanism or Pan-Africanist. If we can unify under Pan-Africanism and embrace economic system of scientific socialism, I think we have a fighting chance. I think we will not continue to perish. And I think as Africans, we can walk upright. We don't have to come on this platforms like, we need to continue these platforms once Africa becomes free. But I'm saying we don't have to come up on these platforms explaining and speaking about what's going on with Ahmaud Arbery's case or what's going on with George Floyd. We can walk upright. We don't have to depend on the morality of American governments and state institutions and military institutions, whether it's the police department, the military, the National Guard. We don't have to depend on them, even the court system, in a sense. We don't have to continue to depend on them to give us what we call justice. And if they was to give us the justice that we want, I guess, of holding these police officers accountable, it's still not going to end the system that we all are struggling under. We are still struggling under the system of capitalism, the system of imperialism, world domination and control. They're trying to evolve from the United States to the United Countries of America. They want to put their flag on every continent and country in the world. They want this globe to be called the United Countries of America. Why they don't go to France? Why they don't go to the UK and try to influence their running of the governments? They're always dealing with Caribbean nations, Caribbean countries, governments. They're always going into Africa. And they in Africa heavy right now, heavy. They got a military base. Why you have to? Let me just say this and I conclude. If you have your house, you have your home, your home, your yard, and everything. How would you feel if I was to come to your home, to your yard, and dominate and say, no, I'm going to do this my way. I'm going to put a pit bull in your backyard to keep you from coming outside because, you know, that pit bull is going to attack you. I'm going to set two pit bulls in your backyard so you won't come out there because I want to have control of your backyard. I'm going to come in your house. I'm going to rearrange your house how I want it. I'm going to take the resources from your house, from your yard. I'm going to take the tools. I'm going to take the food out of your cabinet, take the tools out of your shed, and I'm going to use it for my domination and for my well-being. And leave you and your home at the wayside. Take what I need and dominate. That's the same concept. That's the same exact concept that's going on with Africa. And as Africans, we have to have that mindset. Hell no, you're not gonna come into my home and continue to take over our land and continue to put pit bulls, military institutions, or drone stations, as Obama did when Obama came into power. Drone stations increase in Africa, you know. So we just got to and you know, we got to understand that whether it's Democrat or Republican, they are still two arms of the same body. They're still going to try to dominate under the same style of economic system. That's capitalism backed up with military, and this is what we're dealing with until we get an understanding of Pan-Africanism, and as Brother Anthony said, until we get a system of true organization around as African people and poor people of the world, exploited people of the world. But as what we saying on this phone call, as for our people and for our land, we got to organize as Africans. Until we get to that level, we're going to continue to perish. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Maurice. We're going to take one more caller on this particular subject before we make our transition. We're going to see caller 4298. We're going to bring in caller 4298. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the subject. Caller 4298, welcome to MPH Radio. Yes, caller 4298. The mic is here.
Thank you. I think the analysis that's gone forth has been pretty good. I'd just like to add that, you know, Africa is for Africans and that the European domination of Africa will be ceased when you exercise Pan-Africanism and self-determination, under scientific socialism, an independent government that's able to fight off these capitalists and imperialists. It's good to hear this excellent analysis, and I'm just going to leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, for your contribution to the discussion. This is MPH Radio. Again, to our listening audience, if you get a chance, please check this article out from Ghana News, Washington is to take over Africa. It has all kind of economic and political ramifications of African people throughout the world. So please take heed to it, study it, understand it, and then you can begin to understand where your interests and energies should lie. So on that note, what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a quick station break with music with a message. And when we come back and we continue to discuss the things, signs of the times, we're going to talk a little bit about the role of the church, the role of the African church, this whole question of religion. Where does this fit in the schemes of things when we think about the sign of the times? This is MPH Radio.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Kiss him, game, dine, and go to heaven in Jesus' name, Lord. We know where
That's right. We are encouraging our underserved communities and people to get up and stand up for your rights. Welcome back to MPH Radio. As we discuss our theme, Signs of the Times, there was a study by the Pew Research Center in reference to Africans or blacks in America dealing with their religious preference and looking at their behavior and attitude. You know, one of the things we're interested in, you'll find out, is that you know, in America, they have at least over 100-some think tanks that have dedicated their whole works around every aspect of the lives of African people in this country. Why is that? I tell you that the more you know about something, the better you understand it. The better you understand it, the easier to manipulate and control it. So why are there so many think tanks? And I thought that this particular survey and study of African people as it relates to their religion and their preference was interesting. Let me just share some of the things that came from this Pew survey as it relates to African people in this country. It stated that across religious groups, a majority of black Americans say opposing racism is a central part of their faith. Three-quarters of black Americans say opposing racism is essential to their faith or sense of morality, a view that stands across faith traditions. A majority of black Protestants, along with black Catholics and other Christians, say opposing racism is essential to what being a Christian means to them. And 71% of black religious unaffiliated adults say it is essential to their sense of morality. Talk about black adults in the United States South more likely than those in other regions to attend a black congregation. Black Southerners differ from other black Americans, especially Northeasterners and Westerners, on several measures of religiosity. They are more likely to be a part of a black congregation, more likely to identify as Protestant, and more likely to pray daily, and more likely to say the Bible is the literary word of God. About two-thirds of black Southerners who attend religious services go to a black congregation. Now, they broke down a interesting geographical percentage of so-called Africans and blacks who are very, very religious and they consider themselves as a Christian. And it seems that in the South, you have 65% of the Africans see themselves as a belong to a black congregation, whereas Northeast, 52% of the African population belongs to one. In the Midwest, 60%, out West, 38% belongs to a black congregation. What does that mean if you see yourself as a Christian, but yet you have a tendency to congregate around a certain type of congregation based upon color? How do we see this whole question of religion and role of church today? What are these signs of this time as we begin to analyze this particular institution? So what I can do right now, I'm bringing my co-host back into the fold. Brother Alex, when you saw some of these statistics and these facts or dealing with the behavior and the preferences of African people in this country around the issue of religion affiliation, what are some of the things that you could draw from some of these stats and numbers, Brother Alex?
Well, Mr. Robinson, you know, one of the age-old things has always been said, don't talk about politics and religion. You know, it's the barbershop conversations with deacons that I remember the most as a child growing up, and hearing how young preachers came in the barbershops and talked about the sermons that they were going to deliver. When I look at America as a whole, and I see how these statistics are shown and from the different areas of the country, I also have to remember that we came here and changed us a people. And as we came here, and the ones who did come from South America as well, maybe they were integrated in some of the South American culture as Africa, because they had been there almost 200 years before they came here to the American shores we call the United States or Canada. So we were forced to give up our ancestors' religion from Africa. And we were given a new way to talk, a new way to discuss things, and a new way to see ourselves as. We didn't have any choice in the matter because these things were forced upon us. We were not slaves. We were enslaved. And we became imprisoned in ideas that the country that supported our slavery upon us. So when we look at what happened over time and what we graduated to, whether it was being a Baptist, a Methodist, a Presbyterian, a Catholic, a Jew, whatever religion that we chose at some point, or I'll say our ancestors chose, it was more so because it was where they allowed us and how they allowed us to worship. As many slaves did in this field, still sang the old spirituals from their countries or practiced the old ways of their lands, it began looked down upon, by the other slaves that were out there watching and peeping and going back and talking to master, because we were still holding on to those roots and discipline that our religions had given us back in the homeland. So when we look at moving forward into religion here, we became to accept, and I want to respect today everyone's thought about religion, because that's a personal choice. And I don't mean to make anyone angry or anyone upset, but I would like to bring you the joy that you find in your religion, because it's your faith and your belief. It's what carries you from day to day to make you a better person, because that's the discipleship of religion. It's treating everyone fairly, giving them an honest say, loving thy neighbor, but also watching, understanding, training, learning to be a better person yourself, and getting out here and organizing and doing all the things that you need to do if you believe that what's happening to you needs to change, or the people surrounding you need to change. We were separated. People from Kenya, people from Ghana, all over Africa, Nigeria, Liberia, we were separated. But yet and still, as the people were here in bondage, they found a way to preserve some of their culture in the cruelest of terms. No, we don't worship as our ancestors had, because we've been stripped of it. But we need to go back and learn and get excited of how our ancestors felt about religion. And because there are many religions out there, what's good for you is your own personal choice. I will never ask anyone to seek out my way of salvation, because that's not for everyone. I will provide you the teaching, the understanding, the joy that I get from it, and hope that you can see a light and a way that maybe is something worth sitting down and talking constructively about. Whether we're Christians, Muslims, Jews, Catholics, or whatever, no, the table is not set for anybody's religion to be perfect and worldwide. There are going to be Hinduism and Buddhism and everything else that is out there, whether they're cults or religions or whatever. This is what people will follow to their death sometimes. So we have to be very constructive. We have to be compassionate. We have to be concerned about what people think and think about us. Going forward, we need to have insight, passion, that a man's religion is his own right. And if we can just hold on to good ideas, because we're faced with challenges every day of what we would call good or evil. But to make the challenges that we need to accomplish to make a better place for ourselves, to get countries together, to get governments together, to do the things that need to be done. We look at South America, I think, or the Americas, they call it an Organization of American States. Well, why can't we do the same thing in Africa? Organization of African States. Can we tie those religious beliefs among those nations and bring them to the table? Because this guy's going to believe one way, this guy's going to believe another, and he's going to believe another. But can we sit them at the table and understand that collectively and together that they can progress? Sometimes, if we can move religion, not in the forefront, but just have it there as a safety net before we walk out and say, the heck with everything, I go my own way. So sometimes when we look at religion, whether we're in the South, in the Midwest, the North, it doesn't matter. Religion is very dire and very personal, and we should always respect someone's religion. And again, I'll turn it back over to everyone, because again, I want to hear some opinions. And thank you so much.
Okay, as we continue to look at this data from Pew Research, from the Pew Research Center, it has some interesting data in terms of based upon regions on how they view so-called African people as relates to their preference, religious preference in this country. Now, I can read the statement, and I'd like to have the caller. I'd like to have the caller 6057, caller 6057, tell me what you can extrapolate from this particular type of data. Why is it important to know that when we talk about Protestantism, it is more common among black adults in southern states than any other region. In other words, they're talking about 66% of the Africans in the southern states see themselves come under the banner of Protestantism. Why is that particular point is significant from your perspective, caller 6057?
Yes. The reason why that is significant is because a lot of the slave owners in the southeast part of the U.S. were Protestant, with the notable exception of possibly Maryland, where the slave owners were heavily Catholic. In most parts of the Southeast, the slave owners were Protestant, and I think the slave owners imposed their names upon us, they also imposed their religion upon our ancestors. And I think that's why so many Africans in the Southeast tend to be Protestant for that reason. And another thing that struck me was the struggle against racism was an important factor in terms of a lot of Africans' religious beliefs. And let's see, the Southeast tended to be more blatant in its racism,
than other parts of the U.S., like the Northeast region, the Midwest, et cetera. And I think that is why you know Africans tend to belong more often to predominantly African congregations in the South than they do in other parts of the country, where racism wasn't so blatant but was more subtle or hidden.
Thank you, Carla. And the last point on this particular article, we're going to give this one to Carla, Brother Maurice. You can respond to however you may choose, Brother Maurice. You know, one of the points it mentions is that when you come to the influence of Catholicism or the influence of being a Catholic, they find that the largest percentage of Africans in this country will be found in the Northeast. You have a high percentage of Africans in the Northeast see the favor or practice more towards being a so-called Catholic. What can you conclude from that kind of data, Brother Ravi, from your perspective?
Yes. You know, as an acronymist, I have to speak on what he stated in his book titled Consciousism. And what Kwame Nkrumah stated is that, you know, the triple legacies of Africa, we must take those legacies, which was traditional Africa, the Arab experience of bringing Islam, the European experience of bringing Christianity, or modifying what we already had in place, because the religion is just a form of belief. But my main thing, if you're African, and if you're Muslim, or if you're Catholic or a Christian, your first education, as Nkrumah stated from the digestion of these experiences or these religions or whatever you want to call them, you should digest this in a African personality to redeeming and fighting for freedom and liberation for African people and all exploited people of the world. That's the thing. You know, if you whether your beliefs are Muslim, Christian, of Catholic, that's your belief. But as Malcolm said, when we come to the table to discuss the real issues of African people and exploited people of the world, we should leave, and it's not me saying that, it's what Malcolm X, a follower of Islam, stated. We should leave our religions at home in the closet, because that's between that person and whoever and that person's belief, or that's basically what it's between. But when we come to the issues of dealing with economical issues and dealing with social issues and exploitation and resources in the community and economic issues, we need to be focusing on ideology. And that's the thing that we don't have it really in place. We have a forced ideology based on what the Western propaganda tells majority of us. That's to, you know, go along with entertainment, go along with fashion, consumerism, buying, having the latest this, the latest that. And the kind of ideology is not together. And that's what we got to come to understanding and sorting out what is our ideology. It makes sense to choose an ideology that's going to best free us, best serve our economic needs and our potential. Right now, this capitalist system is not serving our African needs and exploited people needs. That's the terminology. That's for why we call exploited people. We call it calling our people the other people exploited, because we're being exploited by the system. You know, and I'm not trying to say that you're not going to have issues under socialism, but what I will say under socialism that you do have, you have self. And my mind is skipping today, but you have self control, you have self determination, of what we're trying to do. We're not having, you know, we're not going to, it's not a system of exploiting somebody. It's a system of freeing somebody, of owning the resources. That's the thing. But, you know, and the person I just spoke about, Kwame Nkrumah, he was a Catholic. But he understood his ideology was to free Africa and all African people around the world. And I conclude with that. I hope to answer your question.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Carlo. What we're going to do right now, we're going to pause for the call. We're going to take a station break with music with a message. And when we come back, we're going to talk about one more particular phenomenon that's going on in our community. As we talk about signs of the time, we're talking about the possibility of the liquidation and the destruction of HBCU, historical black colleges and universities. We're going to talk about that, and we want you to stay tuned. We don't go nowhere. You're listening to Africa on the Moon.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
This was a ball of confusion and only going to create more. if there is a decline and destruction of HBCU, historically black colleges and universities. We will have this discussion as it relates to Science of the Time. We'll bring back our co-host, Brother Alex. Brother Alex, we talk a little bit about the subject of the airways, and maybe we can share some of your thoughts about this whole question of some of the feel that many intellectuals and educators at African universities feel for in terms of declining and destruction of so-called HBCUs. What is your take on the significance of why we must or should maintain HBCUs? Your thoughts on the subject, Brother Alex, as relates to the signs of the time.
Okay. Again, we have to look at the most important thing that Mr. Lee, you always do, and that is do your research. We'll just take one university, because quite a few of them were founded by whites. Howard University, first president, Civil War hero, General Oliver O. Howard, a white man, serving as the commissioner of the Freedmen's Bureau. Howard University was kept in the hands of white presidents until 1926. When we look at separate but equal, and that's how it all came about, because these Negroes, 1866, were demanding to be educated. Some white masters had sent their half-breed sons on to school. And it was a feeling then that since we're free, that a lot of uneducated blacks would not be good for the workforce as they became and went north to seek employment and jobs and different things. Because now these people were free. But how free were they really? Separate but equal. The whites didn't want them at their schools. So it came to be that we would go ahead through the different missionaries and churches, whether they were Baptist, Presbyterian, or whatever, Catholic. They would set up these schools, post them up with white presidents, because they would know how to handle the money, the staff, and everything. And then it would be a trickle-down effect in the finances of that school to appropriate the funds for the teachers and everyone else to sort of make them in the process of the state-supported schools and the private schools. So in doing so, we began to get what we call historical black colleges popping up everywhere. But as we move forward from what was started, which was a good idea in the beginning for some, but it still separated the most important thing. Because as citizens of the United States, we should have been able to go to any school. It didn't matter. We should not even have thought about HBCUs unless we're thinking about like in an Ivy School League system, where Harvard would be considered like Yale and Princeton, that this would be the best of the best and that this nation had to offer. And not only did it have black students, but it had everyone. Not that it just taught black history, but it taught all history. But we didn't know our history. So for HBCUs, they had so much knowledge, so much tradition, that they were beginning to absorb, to pass on from class to class to class. Because we had to start out somewhere. We were thrust into the learning curve later, not sooner. The European Americans had been to school in this country for years. And so they were so far ahead. But then when we look at the policy, that have begun to hurt these historically black colleges. Is there a controversy to destroy them? And I go back to October of 2011, The U.S. Department of Education adjusted its lending practices for the PLUS loan program. They begin to align themselves with more traditional bank lending. HBCU lost an estimated $50 million in the first full year that these changes took place and has never recovered. If the policies have only gotten worse. The figures are so high that the Education Department will not even publish them. How deeply that black colleges have been hurt by the PLUS loan program changes. Online schools targeting minorities. Schools like the University of Phoenix and many others are trying to grab these students that may enter an HBCU. They're getting more funding from the government to support these online courses. Why go to Norfolk State, Hampton, Virginia Union, or anywhere when I can take an online course at University of New Hampshire? So again, that's more funding being taken away from traditional black colleges. Then another thing that's coming out is the policy to merge HBCUs with state schools. Governors like Louisiana, Bobby Jindal, and the former governor, Haley Barbour, had announced plans to merge their HCBs with other white institutions, and moves that intended to slash state operating costs. Again, another hit at historically black colleges. Instead of and the Build Back America plan and any other plan that's being put forth out there, why do we have to suffer at the hands of the ones that gives millions to white schools to support them? But then when they look at the ones that they decided in government to separate and give another way over to, that you only get scraps of what the government funding gives out. So when we begin to look at how HBCUs hurt themselves, they are slow to adapt to changing things that happen, such as those full degree online programs, and embracing the idea that students don't need to be on the physical campus to benefit, because we're in a pandemic now. Millions of children or college students did not go back. A lot have dropped out and will never see a college campus again. Lack of diversity. HBCUs are getting better at recruiting students to their campuses and programs. But in other areas, they've done very little. And that is reaching out to African students, Latino students, Asian students, to bring in certain numbers of diversity to help the government funding, as the funding is for out-of-country or study-abroad students. That's still money into the university. But not so much as you're going to change the whole diversity and the identity of the school that was put forth in the beginning. The lack of stability in their administration, of how they operate, financial responsibility is not happening at a lot of HBCUs. Money is being mismanaged, not appreciating the students. When it comes to a lot of things, and most people that I know, my brother, A&T, North Carolina Central, and different schools, family members have went everywhere, Morgan State, whatever. But still, these schools and the alumni programs do not honor and appreciate with enough recontact back to that individual who graduated. Every one of my children that have went to state-supported schools constantly get mail and are asked to donate back to so many different things that the schools are doing, because those donations are critical in many areas of that university's structure, and especially for it to succeed, because it needs the ideas of the people that went there to say that, yes, this was a great school, everything, and we need to expand, we need to do that, we need to do this. As we downplay our own and say that the state-supported schools are better than HBCUs, yes, you're going to get less and less recognition by the federal government. So we need to support these universities and give them our best. There are so many factors that I could go on and on and on. But again, Mr. Lee, I want to open it up. Here's some more comments and some more ideas. I gave you a few, and I just hope that, you know, we can add on here today and come up with some solutions, and so that if anybody's listening that have went to an historically black college, I want you to feel honored today that you had that opportunity to get an education that a lot of people will never get. You had an experience far greater than so many people will never even experience at a state or private university that was totally diverse. Because not to say that you were among your own people or your own kind, but it's just that the challenges that you had to go through to even get that degree was in a different time and era than what the kids are going through today. So I truly appreciate anyone that is an alumnus of any of the HBCUs, and I thank you.
Let's go to your call, the 6057. Call the 6057. I'd like to get your perspective on this phenomenon and this possibility of the losing of HBCUs or dissolving them totally. What does that really mean? Some people argue that this whole history of developing HBCUs has been dialectical. There have been positive elements to help move our people forward, and there have been negative elements to add to or aid to our people oppression. That is to say, some people argue that African universities is really to a neocolonialism. Others say there have been some liberation examples that have came from these HBCUs. So how do you see this question of the value and the role of HBCUs today, and how should we deal with this phenomenon? Call us 6057.
Okay. Well, as an alumnus of an HBCU, Howard to be exact, I do see a value in them. In the fact that they were the only place, one of the few places other than the church where Africans could outwardly express their cultural identity, so to speak. And let's see, and because several HBCUs were founded by Europeans because they didn't want their African offspring going to predominantly European institutions, I also see the neocolonial aspect of that also. And I think Brother Alex was correct. HBCUs have been slow to adapt to change, particularly in technology and whatnot. And I think that's been a factor in
you know, in their demise. But also there've been also some positive things of positive cultural value that have also come out of HBCUs. To give one example, there was a time where those were one of the few places that were available for African PhDs to work at. Give you one example, African History Month, which started as Negro History Week, which was organized by Carter G. Woodson during the 1920s at the request of a group of Howard students. So, so ironically, even though historically the administrations of HBCUs have been a force for maintaining neocolonialism and enhancing it, there have been some positive cultural contributions that have been made by HBCUs. For example, another example is George Washington Carver might not have gotten the means to develop a lot of the scientific contributions he made to agriculture had he not been given that opportunity at Tuskegee Institute by Booker T. Washington. As another example. So, it's kind of a dialectical sort of thing, but I think there's a value to HBCUs because of the racism that pervades the society.
Thank you, caller. We'll get a response from our special guest today, Brother Maurice. Your thoughts on the subject, Brother Maurice?
Yes. HBCUs are highly important. Unfortunately, I cannot sit up here and say that I'm an alumni of HBCU. But I would say that I had the goals and the intentions to get to Howard University and to their law school, because at the time of being, you know, an undergraduate, I had in my mind that I wanted to go, you know, be a human rights attorney. And I was, you know, taking care of my mother, so I couldn't make it to D.C. I had to stay in Richmond. Therefore, I had to settle for the PWI in Richmond that had a law school. But I would say that in the PWI, they did have a kind of sort of progressive political science department within having a class by a professor from Sierra Leone, a Politics of Africa class, and a Developing Nation class, Professor Jimmy Conde. I was very thankful to be in his class because he taught us about Nkrumah, he taught us about Lumumba, and he taught us about Sankara. You know, he taught us about Africa. You know, and not only the whitewashed version of Africa, but the African, the real version of Africa. So I'm forever grateful for that brother. But as to get back to the topic, HBCUs are highly important because, as we know, you know, with Booker, we can't really, you can if you want to, but I feel like we can't sit up here and talk about HBCUs without talking about our great brother, Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington, you know, he went and helped build up, but at the time where he was at the Hampton Institute, to Hampton University, and he went and built up Tuskegee University, and great people and great ideas came out of Tuskegee University, and, you know, just wanted to make that plain. But when we look at present day time and look what's going on at Howard University, students are camping outside in tents, and the water situation, the situation we have at Howard University, and you have your vice president who is an alumni of Howard University, the Mecca of HBCUs is what it's called, I believe, and you know it's sitting by the wayside. And this is nothing new under Joe Biden. This happened under President Barack Obama. as we know, HBCU funding has decreased when Obama, you know, came into power as POTUS. But, you know, HBCUs are highly important, but they definitely are under attack. Even the great Virginia Union University is under attack. You know, they having this inclusion, if you will, of white people, of Latinos coming into the university, and they putting an emphasis on Latino students. And we still got some work to do with our African students and our work with being connected into high schools. I feel like Virginia Union University could be a stronger connect into our high schools, working in the school system. You know, I definitely feel like Union and Virginia State could be more involved in our, due to that lack of funding. You know, they have to put their time and I guess their resources to other things internally within their institutions. But I think the situation that's going on with HBCUs is purposely done. Everywhere you look at that's every I say this, every format or every situation you see where it could be huge African development, it is attacked, indirectly or directly, it's attacked. I believe it was President Eisenhower, and I'd probably be wrong on this on the president, not on the information, but on the president. I might have the wrong president, but it was the United States president, say the least, that stated that we have to do something with these black ghettos. The black power movement and the black power leaders are coming out of these ghettos. We have to do something to these ghettos. Thus you had gentrification, thus you had the I-95 bridge thrown to it and thrown cut right through our black communities. Not only I-95, but the highway in general was a tactic and was a weapon against black communities. You had all of these things, gentrification, the highway system going into in the high confinement of African males being in jail. All of this is connected. And what the brother Bambosha spoke about earlier in regards to Nicaragua with the Iran-Contras, that dope money, that coke money and that cocaine, the money was used from, once again, our oppression of Africans. Of, you know, I have family members right now to this day who are still victims and being brutalized by this addiction of crack cocaine, man. It's a serious situation. But all of these things are connected. And I just want to give a shout out to Reverend Jesse Jackson that was brought to my attention by Brother Lee, by you, Brother Lee, that you pointed out what he said. He said, we got to connect all of our struggles. This is not only a Howard University struggle. This is a world struggle that's going on across the world among Africans and people who are taken advantage of. So we have to have this understanding, and we have to work like hell to get our institutions back in the hands of Africans and get our land back in the hands of Africans and our resources and our lives back. Because right now we're getting beat up, and we're getting taken advantage of, and we're getting taken as fools at this point. I conclude, we 2020, we do the same thing that we always been, that Africans has been doing, rebelling against oppression, rebelling against violence that's taking place among us. And then they always prop up an African or a black face, and they prop up a black museum, or they prop up a black statue or a black holiday. Symbolism. Let's get symbolism to the crowd, to the African people who are in what they call an uproar, and let's quell the masses of this frustration. Let's quell the masses of the rebellion so they cannot get to the point of organization and destroying and understanding that we need to destroy the system that exists to that continue to oppress us and our institutions, in this case as HBCUs. So I conclude with that, and I hope the point that I touched on was basically the answer your question at hand.
And this will be our last caller to respond to this issue. We will go to caller 4298. Any particular comments you'd like to make, caller, on this particular issue, 4298.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'd like to say, you know, when I came out of high school, I entered Howard University. I didn't stay though. But the importance of HBCU is very important. I think that we need to get more funding for HBCUs, and we need to develop the minds of our African children, and it's critical because we live in a racist society, and we have to unite against racism and reinforce each other's self-esteem and integrity, and that's why it's so important, the school system. And I support HBCUs, and I hope that other people will too. I'll just leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Colin. And to our listening audience, you are listening to MPH Radio. Today is the 13th November 2021. Our theme today was Part 2, Signs of the Times. We'd like to just let you know that MPH Radio is a bi-weekly radio program under the direction of Missing Pages of History, Inc. If you'd like to call me a supporter, call me a friend, or a member of Missing Pages of History, we encourage you to email us. You can email us at mphradio@yahoo.com, mphradio@yahoo.com, and we'd be more than happy to extend you an invitation and a membership to become part of MPH Radio family. We also like to remind you that there is a real important book that we think every African and every progressive thinking person around the world should have in their library. So we ask you to act now and to find 5 to 10 more people, call your friends, supporters, relatives, and tell them support the author and purchase these particular books. The author is Brother Bob Brown. He's founder of Pan-African Roots. He just released a 2-volume book titled We Demand Full Disclosure and Dignitization of All Slavery Earl Records, Volume 1, Volume 2, by Brown, under the banner of P.A. Roots. It's an excellent book if you really want to know more about the history of slavery, institutes of slavery, who was the slave owners, how and where they created their wealth, and just a host of information in that area. It's an excellent written Volume 1 and 2. To order these books, you can go to the website www.a-prp-gc.org. Please go to that website again. It's www.a-prp-gc.org. It's a book, a must-read book you must have in your library. So purchase the book, support the brother, and you will help be moving our people forward. We also would like to remind you that on July 23rd to August the 3rd, we'll be taking a education Black historical tour to Cuba with friends and families and members of MPH Radio, along with the African World Association. We want you to come and join us. If you are interested in going on this tour coming up July the 23rd to August the 3rd, please contact us at mphradio@yahoo.com. Please contact us, and we will send you the information that is needed. This tour, for those friends and members of MPH and supporters of MPH Radio, we're going under the banner in honor of Emmanuel Joyner, who is a very significant and important co-founder of this particular radio program. So please, in the name of Mr. Joyner, and supporting MPH Radio Works, please do that. We'd like to remind you, because of the COVID, we're trying to act responsible, that right now we have halted all our activities as of right now, and when we feel like time is better suited to start back our activities, we will let you know. But till then, please tune in every other Saturday to hear this program and spread the word. It's every other Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. So right now what we're going to do is we're going to pause with music with a message. And when we come back, we're going to ask all of our participants and guests to give us their final words for today's program. This is the voice of MPH, and this is MPH Radio. We'll be right back.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change, everything still remains the same. I can't do what people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting
time. Welcome back to the MPH Radio. You listen to the voice of Missing Pages of History. We've been discussing part two, Signs of the Time, on today's program. And we will now close out our program with some of our participants and special guests to just give us some final thoughts on today's program. And we'll start with caller 4298. Any final words and thoughts, caller 4298. On today's program.
Thank you. I think Malcolm X said we're not catching hell because we are Methodists. We're not catching hell because we're Catholic or Islam, but we're catching hell because we're Black. And you need to unite around that issue. And I understand that religion is a personal matter, and in government, we need a secular government, a government that is based upon truth and fair play and justice and not on any particular religion. So having said that, I thank you and wish everyone a good day. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, for your support and to today's program. We now go to our other participant, caller 6057. Caller 6057. You'll find the thoughts for today's program.
Yes, I thought today's program was very informative, and I appreciate everybody's contributions to the program. And I think the solution to the problems facing Africans worldwide is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism.
Thank you, Carlo, for your participation in today's program. And we go to our special guest for today, Brother Maurice Robinson. Your final thoughts for today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just want to thank you for having me on Mr. Pages of History. I want to thank Brother Alex for his great dialogue, his great information. I want to thank Brother Anthony for his great information and great dialogue, and also Brother Moses for his great information and great dialogue. It's always a blessing to hear you guys' voices and hear you guys' knowledge and wisdom. And I don't want to want to continue known as a special guest, but I want to become more known as a regular guest on the show. But I just want to thank you all so much, and to echo the words of Brother Anthony, Pan-Africanism now, or perish as we are. We have to get organized, and we can't keep saying it. We have to get active, man. This is the only way our oppression will stop. Forward ever, backwards never. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you, Brother Maurice. Our platform is open. We're ready whenever you're going to come forward time. We thank you. Next, we'll go to Alex. As he'll say, Alex, the young folks, Brother Alex, will you kick us some ballistics and your final thoughts?
Yes, I would like to thank you, Mr. Lee, again for a wonderful, wonderful show. And it's brought so much inspiration to me that I'm going to take this, hear it a couple times, and just reverberate back, because Maurice, Anthony, Moses, and the callers called in have done a marvelous job of displaying what intelligent talk is all about. To be able to converse and have maybe not the same opinion, but to come to the same conclusion that we are united in a struggle that only concerns one thought. And that thought is what? From the existence of this country and centuries before, the color of one's skin determined how he was treated by somebody from Europe. Yes, we were great kings and queens, pharaohs, leaders, generals, great men in the homeland of Africa. We spread our knowledge, our engineering, our medicine, our science. We spread so many things throughout the world, just as well as the oil and the gas and the diamonds and the gold that has came from Africa. Africa is a wealth of everything, and we have shared a wealth of ideas here today. And so, again, I say I appreciate you, brother. As Dr. King said, brothers means everything. So I salute you, brothers, today for a wonderful job. And I turn it back to you.
You have been listening to Missing Pages of History, MPH Radio. Our next program will be November 27th at 1 p.m., same time, same station. Please spread the word. Again, we are in the process of collecting names and supporters of our radio program. If you're a friend and supporter of the radio program and you listen to it, please let us know and email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. Also, don't forget, let's support our intellectuals. Let's support our brother Bob Brown, was just released a two-volume book titled We Demand the Full Disclosure and Dignitization of All Slavery-Era Records. It's an action book of research of dealing with slavery, talking about where you came from, who brought you, how much they made of you. It's information that we would need to know and use to help liberate our people throughout the world. So please go to this website, www.aaprp-gc.org, and make that purchase right now. And find 5 to 10 more of your friends and relatives to purchase the books as well. And my final thoughts for tonight in closing, we would just like to remind you that MPH Radio is a institution, it's an instrument, it's a tool for our various underserved communities. We want to be a voice for the voices. We want to speak truth to the powerless as well as the powerful. We know without information you cannot think. And we know the best way to move forward is to understand our past. And by understanding our past, the only way we can do that is to make sure we write our history, we control our history, we produce our history, and we continue to fill in our history, particularly of those missing pages of our history. Until next time, we see you on the 27th. We just want to remind you and the world that we are here for all of us. You have been listening to the voice of MPH Radio.
Right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense.